Canucks Central Tuesday. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah here in the Kintech studio. Kintech Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, supported by over 2,500 five-star Google reviews. Find your perfect fit at kintech.net. Hope you enjoyed your long weekend. The Stanley Cup playoffs have continued, and so far in each conference final, only one team is on the board.
Yeah, it looks like we are going to have a clean sweep in both major sports that play a seven-game series simultaneously in the postseason.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I mean, the Miami Heat can sweep the Celtics. The Nuggets swept the Lakers.
Yes. And condolences to you.
Yeah,
they did.
Yeah. No. Today, Josh
Eliwolf is walking around like he's Conor McGregor in the office today. Got his Dikembe Mutombo shirt on.
I know. And you know what? To his credit, I was talking to somebody at the gym today, and he's also a Lakers fan, and we were like, bemoaning the fact that Lakers lost and everything. And I was like,
Did like every Vancouverite just become a Lakers fan after the Grizzly died? Like, what happened?
Dude, at my gym, it's all Lakers gear, and I'm like, maybe I won't wear anything Nuggets related there.
Well, I mean, like, the Lakers have been the most popular team probably outside of LA for a long time now.
That's
right?
True.
Especially through.
They're the Dallas Cowboys, yeah.
Yeah, they pretty much are, right? In very many different ways. So I was telling somebody today, I was like, Josh, who's a big Nuggets fan, I'm like, he got in at the right time. Like, you became a Nuggets fan right before it was cool to be a Nuggets fan, or right before they became what could be the next NBA champion.
Yeah, bubble year was when I hopped on the bandwagon.
That's four years ago, yeah.
And then last year was kind of tough. Last year felt like a year they could have if Jamal was healthy and MPJ was healthy.
Yeah.
But this is the year.
Yeah. You got it. See, so there could be a clean sweep there. The Florida Panthers are a game away from sweeping the Carolina Hurricanes. And my Dallas Stars are in tough against the Vegas Golden Knights.
Struggling. And we'll have game three of that series tonight here on Sportsnet 650. We are with you 3 to 5 all week this week if you are listening live, but also on podcast. You can get us on demand so you can listen anytime, anywhere with your favorite podcatcher. Subscribe, leave a review. That way you can never miss an edition of Canuck Central, and we do appreciate those reviews when we do get them. All right. Canucks talk. It's still very much in the preparing for the offseason, and that's the way it goes. But, there are 28 teams now that are on the sidelines and trying to figure out where they are going next. As for the Canucks, the question remains the same, Sat. We'll get to Vitali Kravtsov and what happened there. But the question of the offseason, the big question of the offseason, continues to be, how is this team going to clear up some cap space?
Yeah, and it's something the insiders have been talking about, quite a bit. I heard Frank Saravalli mention it on the DFO podcast. We've heard Elliot Friedman mention it numerous times, and he mentioned it with Donnie and Dolly, and we'll have Don Taylor on to chat about it a bit more. Now, the Canucks are trying to clear space. Now, what we've heard is the Canucks are trying to clear space, and what I've also heard for a long time is they're trying to make their team better. And I think there is a level of confusion with, wait, how are you going to clear space and make the moves you need to make to take a step back in terms of contracts and then get better at the same time? And I just say that's been their MO since they took over. Every move they make to move money out is the thought of replacing it with somebody else.
Yeah.
And sometimes even putting the money on the books, regardless of being able to replace it, right?
It's funny. If you look back and listen back to Jim Rutherford in his first few availabilities, he talked a lot about wanting to open up cap space and mentioned the way we're going to get better is by opening up cap space.
Yes.
And we all, or I would say most of us, assumed, well, you open up a certain amount of cap space, let's say a plenty of cap space, and then you wait for your opportunity to go and then use some of that cap space. But it's just really been almost simultaneous. Like, if we have some cap space, we're going out and using it.
Yeah, and I think they kind of told us that if they have cap space, they have a number of players they've targeted that they're going to go pursue. And it's like, once we clear the money, we can go and get these guys we're looking for. If we had money, there are a bunch of players we feel like we can acquire to make our team better.
So Patrick Alvin's got a big whiteboard somewhere at Rogers Arena, and it's just like, all right, we can go get Sebastian Aho if we open up this much cap space. This is what it's going to cost us.
Something
maybe
along
not
those lines.
Sebastian Aho.
Maybe not Aho, but yeah, I mean, I think they have a list of guys, and depending on how much they clear and what type of assets they have, it would open up the door for them to go and acquire some of these guys, right? And I'd say their goal isn't, like you mentioned, to just move the money out for the sake of moving it out.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm curious about is, do they have their eyes set on a couple of players they need to have money to acquire, or are they trying to make hockey deals? But one thing we keep hearing is they're trying to clear space. And what that tells me is they're trying to clear the space to open up the money either in free agency or somebody they're targeting elsewhere.
Yeah.
And what are they? What do they want? A third line center and another defenseman.
Yeah.
How do you make those additions without moving money out?
Well, you can't.
Unless you make a hockey deal. And we've spoken about this. We've given examples, right, about can you move Garland for another player, or third line center, for instance? Can you do that?
You can find some hockey deals, some potential ones around the league somewhere, somehow, that maybe the money is almost equal or give or take a certain amount you're taking back or giving up. It works out that way. But it's generally not how a ton of trades are made in the NHL, right? Usually it's cap or future value going to a team in order to take a player off of their books for whatever reason. Their contract is coming up or that player wants to move on. The other way is generally, you know, teams are just, hey, we need to go out and get a right shot defenseman like the Filip Hronek one, and we're just going to pay the cost to go and get that player.
Yeah, if you want that type of quality of player, there's a cost that comes with it.
Yeah.
And, so the Canucks, they wanted to get a righty defenseman.
Yes.
And, you know, Amar mentions, is that a good way to function in terms of, you know, you necessarily have to replace the money you're sending out? I always subscribe to the idea of give yourself assets.
Yes.
And wait for opportunities to arise as well. And as much as they were looking for a righty defenseman and they were trying to get it, they still settled for the best package available, which was a first-round pick and Atu Ratu, right? And once Hronek became available, they flipped that for Hronek.
Yeah.
I don't think their goal was all along to flip that pick for another defenseman unless the player they wanted became available. So they have also shown that they will, but that was also forced upon them because what are you going to do? Not trade Bo Horvat before the deadline? Like, you kind of have to make that deal, you know what I mean? And it can't be a perfect clean move for you. But it was interesting looking at what Scott Powers wrote in his article in The Athletic about the Chicago Blackhawks and what they're looking to do at the draft. Because I'll let you break it down here in a second. Because that's a way using your draft picks to clear money, right? Whether it's you're attaching a pick to a player to move it, or you're trading up and down in a draft to move it, that's an avenue that can provide you a way to move money, using draft pick capital.
Generally, you know, we see the Patrick Marleau deal that happened here in Vancouver a couple of drafts ago. The Maple Leafs sent a first-round pick with Patrick Marleau to Carolina in order to get that contract off the books. We've seen, you know, the Canucks do it with Jason Dickinson last year in the Chicago trade. We're going to give you a second round pick so that, you will take Jason Dickinson away from us. And generally, that's the more traditional way of clearing money off of your books via trade. But Scott Powers frames it a little differently. So the idea of the Blackhawks wanting to move up from their second first-round draft choice, which currently stands at 19th overall, and Scott Powers says this: the package would have to be the number 19 pick and a second-rounder or two that probably isn't enough for a team to budge from a top 15 selection. The Vancouver Canucks might be the only team that could make some sense. It's no secret the Canucks are trying to get out of a few contracts this offseason. If the Blackhawks took on one of those contracts and packaged a first and second round pick, maybe that would entice the Canucks to trade the number 11 pick. There should be some really good players left on the board at 11 if the Blackhawks could do that. So that's a Chicago writer's point of view on one of their options, one of maybe the ideas that they have to move up from number 19 and add another top-end prospect to Connor Bedard this year.
That's a bit more creative,
yes,
right? And I think it's not something outside the realm of possibility because of Chicago's situation. They have 40 million in cap space. They have to get to the cap floor at this stage, right?
Yes.
So they have to spend some level of money. They still have to add some level of talent around Connor Bedard for him to... You have to have some skilled guys to pass the puck to.
And they don't have very many
NHL
quality players.
And hey, you can still add a couple of NHL quality players and one good player and still only have 60 points next year.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, you still have to give him something.
Yes.
You know, you can't have nothing around Connor Bedard. And the thing about it is, what type of value are you passing up on by moving the 11th pick? Because if you're getting, hypothetically speaking, what does it cost to move up from 19 to 11 usually?
What would the trade value chart say?
Yeah.
I don't know. It'd be pretty expensive.
As a second round pick plus usually, right?
Yeah.
Now, it's instructive looking. I mean, it's hard because you know how in the NFL they have like the draft value charts. Now, some of them are the Jimmy Johnson ones that are so old. People say that's even outdated or whatever. Regardless, it's hard to get consensus mm-hmm. on pick value charts.
And teams might view it differently.
Exactly. But if you look at some of the public ones or whatever, the difference between 11 to 19 would essentially be a high second round pick.
So Chicago, I think their second rounder would be 35th overall or
yes.
thereabouts. So would that be enough to go to the Canucks, say, we'll give you our 19th pick plus the 35th overall selection. You give us your 11th overall selection and we'll take Connor Garland off your hands.
From a trade value chart yeah. wise, that would be you get the same draft chart value. If you get a high second round
pick. So that's about value.
You're getting value for it, but you are giving away the higher draft pick.
Yes.
But you're also getting, say, Connor Garland's money off the books. Because I think it would have to be Garland or Besser.
Well, yeah, there's not too many other players that it really makes sense for. We know the Canucks aren't moving off Andre Kuzmenko in that type of a deal.
No.
Beauvillier, you just get the 1 year off. Does that make a ton of sense? And I think this team is more committed or would prefer... Yeah. to keep Beauvillier over the previous two players we mentioned. And then the other one is Tyler Myers, I guess. But would Chicago want to do that for Tyler Myers? If there's one area that they don't really need extra players on, it's the right side of defense.
Yeah,
right
and it's a $5 million bonus paid to him. But the thing with Myers is you can probably get a second or third round pick for him if you retain at the deadline.
Yeah.
So you'd be able to recoup the draft pick.
Right away.
Pretty
if
quickly.
Chicago, yeah.
If it's Besser or Garland, you can still recoup it down the road, maybe in a year or two.
It's because right now, you know, Chicago did the trade for Nikita Zaitsev just yeah. this past trade deadline, right? So they've already done this kind of a deal with a right shot D.
Jake McCabe, too. I mean, they gave him up and Lafferty. They retained on McCabe
yeah.
to get more value back in return.
So I would think it has to be for Garland or Besser.
Yeah.
As we've always talked about, as far as who are the Canucks really trying to move in order to open up cap space.
So let me put it to you, and you too, Josh. Would you do it? Let's say, it depends on which models you look at, right? I mean, Dom Lucigian's model shows that if you go from 11 to 19 and even get the 51st pick, which Chicago has, which is yeah. Tampa's, or 56, yeah, 51st pick, which is Tampa's, that still gives you the same exact value. But the other charts show it would have to be, let's just say for argument's sake, right? Let's just say for argument's sake, it's a high second round pick.
Mm-hmm.
Would you do it?
For
Garland. Because I think Vancouver would rather trade Garland or Besser.
It almost seems, for the Canucks and the way that they've positioned themselves, it almost seems too good to be true.
Like, you think it's too good a deal to be true to move Garland, get a second?
I know you're giving up the chance at a really good player
yeah.
at 11.
Yeah.
Like, I get all that. But even still, that's probably a player that's not helping you in the next couple of years. So, to me, you know, this seems like the deal that would best serve the Canucks in order to open up a little bit of cap space so that they can go and do something with it as early as July 1st or whatever they want to do.
You open up that $5 million for Garland. What it does do is you become, I mean, you have $5 million in cap space all of a sudden.
Yes.
Right now you don't have any cap space, which allows you to sign Ethan Bear, fill out your roster. And with LTIR, you can go out and sign a third line center and perhaps make a trade for a defenseman. Like, you could do those things with LTIR and moving Garland.
And you still get another top 35 selection. Yeah. So you're still getting a second good prospect out of this, just you're not getting that one true, potentially real true
right.
quality prospect.
I think you would also have to know who's falling to 11 before you do it. Like, if somebody you really like slips out of the top 10, maybe it's Michkov, though I don't think he's falling that far. Like, that trade would look a lot worse than if the top 10 goes how you think it might go and mm-hmm. and you're not as pumped about who's there at 11.
Yeah, I can see it being like that, like in terms of get closer to the draft, you know, first round, and then make the deal then. If I'm Chicago, though, and you're trying to move up, you may want to get that done earlier.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to do those things right on the draft floor, especially when it comes to moving a contract out and everything. But I think that would be the ideal way of doing it for Vancouver. But the reason I'm not keen on this idea,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to mess with the 11th overall pick, guys. Like, you know, I've been sitting here saying, listen, I wish we had a higher draft pick in Vancouver to talk about. I really wish we would be able to talk about something higher. But yeah, given how this draft could shake out and given the amount of talent available, you could come away with a star player at 11. You're right. It might take a year or two.
Yeah.
But guess what, Dan? In a year or two, when this team maybe is ready to take a step, now you airlift a really good player into the roster.
Yep.
They need ELC guys. Like, I think about this as a 3 or 4 year plan, right? It's not just about, and I think everybody really hopes that it's a 3 or 4 or 5 year plan. And part of it is you're trying to be competitive right now, but it's also understanding that you need more to happen for you in a couple of years. And if you don't have guys in ELCs available for you, where are you getting the cheap talent from? And I honestly think that in this year's draft, and at 11, you could come away with a player that's a real star player for you. Like, we'd be sitting here talking about, we all talk about Vancouver maybe getting the 5th or 6th overall pick, but they got the same type of player at number 11. Like, that's staring you, right? That opportunity is there for you this year, and I'm afraid of letting that go.
Michkov could fall. Benson could fall. Like, there are...
Even, like, let's say they take Dvorsky there. Let's say they get Reinbacher, who they may like.
There's reasons why this draft is being compared to the 2015 draft and, you know, other years where we've seen a ton of talent, superstar talent, come out of the draft. This could be one of those times. But moving off of $5 million right now for this team and wanting to push this program forward, I mean, that's a huge value to what this group is currently trying to do. And you still are going to add a really good prospect out of it. Like, if this conversation were to change, and let's say Chicago's not as keen on giving up their second rounder, they've got three others.
Yes.
Ottawa, the Rangers, and the Tampa Bay Lightning. If you're giving me any one of those other three, I may be not as... I'm certainly not nearly as enticed.
Right.
Because Ottawa's would be a mid-second round pick. Like, you're talking about falling out of the top 40 all of a sudden in that scenario. That's maybe too far a jump. I'm viewing this as we're going to get two first round level prospects out of this, and we're moving off of a first round draft, and we're moving off of $5 million.
Which again comes down to maybe being too good to be true.
Yes.
A little bit, but I think in terms of Connor Garland, I've been saying all along, like, if you get to a point where you can move Garland for nothing, that's a win. This would be moving Garland for nothing, essentially.
So,
if you get a high second.
Instead of moving down 8 spots, if you're the Canucks, would it not make more sense to say, like, because you're trying to move Garland for nothing, right?
Right.
What if you just attach a 4th or 6th round pick with Garland?
If you can do that, sure. But I wonder, like, for a team like Chicago, for instance, is that the value they see in it? To take that money on.
No, I think
for
them, but I wonder if any team around the league would be interested.
Yeah, I'd rather do that. Honestly, I'd rather do that. I'd rather attach. You have 3 fourths. Yeah, throw a 4th, throw a 5th, throw a 6th. I don't care. Like, attach those. Let's get them off the books.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Theoretically, on the pick value system,
right?
Maybe that's you're giving up a bit more.
You are maybe, but I'd rather do that. The only thing, and you mentioned this when we were talking about this before the show, Josh, and this is where I'm willing to roll the dice. If you know you can use your 3rd-round picks and your 4th-round picks, move up from 19. Can you make this deal, get to 19, then package a 3rd and a couple of 4ths to get from 19 to, say, 15, 14?
Yeah. But aren't you falling out of that second tier of player anyways?
I think you want to be top 15.
You want to be top 15?
I think I want to be top 15. Now, some say it's to 20 even,
yep.
So you're still kind of in that range. And if the list is 20, it may as well be 25, because not all 20 guys are going to be gone by the time you pick a 20. So you're going to have 4 or 5 guys to choose from that you're going to be high on if the list is up to 20. I think 15 is a number for me looking at it, and obviously we don't have the same information every single team does, but I feel comfortable in the top 15. Like, I feel comfortable. Like, I don't mind going down to 14 and 15.
You're probably still getting one of your guys in the top 15.
You are. But 19, I'm not even sure you get my guy Willander.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he's going to be available.
You don't think Tom Willander will be there at 19?
I don't know. He may not even be there at 11. With
not
some
with
of
the
stuff
way
going
stats
on.
Hyping him.
No kidding. I'm not even somebody who's putting him into the top 10. There are people putting him into the top 10 in terms of now. It's only one or two people doing it, but you ask around, and people around the league are high on this kid.
I guess the question is, how confident are you that this team can do something tangible with that $5 million of cap space?
Well, I am not. So do you feel bad in terms of the player evaluation?
I think that's the one thing that I've been confident about.
Right. So, like, you wouldn't have confidence. I wouldn't have confidence about the Canucks making the right choice with $5 million with Jim Benning.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'd be like, I don't know, man. Like, we've seen the free agent moves. We've seen the players you give him money to. Like, yeah. almost no contracts been surplus value.
Yeah.
Very few of them have been, you know.
Yep.
Now the Quinn Hughes one looks very good. So there are some. Demko one, of course. Like, there are a couple. And, you know, you don't want to make a...
Those were obvious.
Yeah, some obvious ones. But still, you know, good job. All that. You got those guys done at a good number. But with the players these guys have evaluated, it's certainly a lot better.
Yeah.
So are they going to...
Beauvillier's been a good fit. Ethan Bear had a... Like, regardless of what you think of Ethan Bear, he was a solid fit on the roster and Mikheyev. How much he should get paid. Mikheyev is a nice player for this team.
Kuzmenko
was unbelievable.
Niels Ullmann, Dakota Joshua.
Both, like, for what they were paid, really quality.
So I don't feel like they don't know what they're doing in terms of identifying players.
Yeah.
Now, they could still make a mistake. I'm not saying, oh, they're going to nail, you know, the moves they're going to make.
No, but they've hit at a pretty good rate.
Yeah,
so
they've done a pretty good, you know, so, like, you know, I don't feel and, you know, I don't lack confidence in them being able to evaluate talent with what we've seen in the past here, for instance.
It's, that is... at least a point of confidence. The draft pick value, look, there's ways you can sell it. There's ways that it's going to be hard to sell. You know, the number 11 pick, there's probably going to be a really good player there.
Yeah.
And a player that some of this market and some of the diehard Canucks fans have already been researching and wondering, could my Canucks be able to draft this guy at 11? All of those are very possible. It's a lot harder to do that at 19. You know, there's no doubt, you know, your chances of hitting a star player at 19 are far less than they are at 11 in the draft. There's no question about that, and especially in this class. So that's something to take in mind.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is, right? And I know Reg mentions, why would you say Garland over Besser? It's not even, like, honestly, like, I think Garland has been a better hockey player than Brock Besser has been. Like, I don't disagree about that, like, especially the last couple of years.
Playing well at the Worlds, too, is... Brad and Cloverdale mentions on the Dunbar Lumber text message.
But it comes down to skill set and how he can fit with players here. And I don't think he fits well. And I think the organization doesn't see him as being a fit. So when I say it has to be Garland over Besser, it's more than just my opinion. I think if all things were equal, they'd rather get rid of Garland over Besser. So that's the main reason I say Garland over Besser, because I think the organization would prefer, and maybe they'd like to move both, but if they had a preference, they I think it's harder to see the fit for Garland here than Besser.
I'm always going to be a Garland guy, you know, undersized, diminutive forward. Like, I'm always going to fight for that guy. But I can't sit here and say that Besser's ceiling is lower than Garland's. If Besser has a bounce-back year, plays well offensively, plays more of the two-way game that we've seen him play earlier in his career, and let's live in a fantasy land that the Canucks make the playoffs and Besser plays well there too.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you're talking about a guy whose reputation has been rebuilt and will have value around the league.
Exactly, man. And I think these guys can have value. The question is when and what your timeline is here, right? I mean, if it was up to me, you know how many guys I trade if I could? I trade Ethan Bear in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Trade half the roster if you could.
If I could. I mean, there's like four guys I hold on to.
That's the Vancouver Canucks for you. Irfan Ghaffar going to join us. His take on the Canucks and the Stanley Cup playoffs next on Canucks.
Big opinions and good bets. It's the People's Show with Bick Nizar. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Canucks Central in the Kintech studio. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. A lot of texts coming into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. 650-650 is where you can get in and chat with the show. There's a lot of thoughts here that's come into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. One says, what about the rumor of the Canucks moving to third overall in order to grab Carlson? Any truth to it, and what would it take? And would it be worth it? That's Chris from Nanaimo. We spoke about this a little bit last week, and it's not realistic. Teams don't trade top five picks.
No, they just don't.
The last player to be traded that was selected with a top five selection was Luke Shen. and it was the Maple Leafs moving up from 7 to 5. So nothing like a scenario of moving up from 11 to 3 like the Canucks would have to do.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just not going to happen. It's not. I mean, it's just not. I'm sorry to burst anybody's bubble here, but it's just not going to happen.
Also, the way Carlson's playing at the Worlds, I don't think we should rule out the possibility of him going second overall.
Yes.
Right now. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Let's bring in our next guest. He's the first overall pick on this show every time he's on. It's Irfan Ghaffar, the fourth period. What's happening?
Wow. How kind.
I got to be nice to you once in a while.
That's true.
Especially you're grieving the Lakers, so I know you're not feeling the best today.
I mean, they're winning every game, and then they lose every game. Whatever. It's over. Go Miami.
Of course, LeBron made it about him after and talked about potentially retiring, so that's good, too.
Well, what's he supposed to do? Not answer a question?
I guess so. Why do you have to be so cryptic? We know he's not retiring. Come on.
No, 100% he's not retiring. The timeline, I think I tweeted it from Arash Marchese, who's like an excellent reporter out of LA. He's done stuff there forever. But it's like next year is like LeBron's whatever. He's got his final year in his deal. And then Bronny's one and done. So they're going to play together. And then the 2025 NBA All-Star game is in LA.
Yeah. So there's so probably your timeline.
LeBron farewell tour right there.
Yeah. He wants to play with Bronny.
Yeah.
Play with his son.
And a player of LeBron's stature, he's going to get a retirement tour, right? Jeter got it. The Sedins got it. You get a retirement tour. That's the way of the world these days.
Kobe got it.
Yep. All right, that's enough basketball talk here on Canuck Central.
I had a chat with Marcus Fitzgerald, too, on Basketball Central for his show about the Lakers. So I've cried enough about the Lakers for one day.
All right, so enough of that. Canucks offseason. There's already, I mean, it's been going on for the entirety of the Canucks offseason, at least in these circles. How are they going to clear cap space? And there's a question about, or a thought out of Chicago saying that the Blackhawks could trade with the Canucks to move from 19 to 11 and maybe take one of the Canucks contracts that they're looking to move on from. I mean, we're basically in dealer's choice territory here. It's like, come up with any idea to get money off the Canucks' books.
Yeah, well, I mean, and in all reality, out of the top, maybe 7, 8, or 9 guys, between 10 and the rest of that draft, you're hoping to strike gold there, right? And I think that for the Canucks, if they don't have a legitimate player that they're very interested in at 11, I mean, why not look at that? If the Blackhawks love someone at 11 and they're willing to take on a bad contract back from the Canucks, I would do that move any day of the week. It's a little bit more creative than other things that we've heard, and it's probably the easiest route for them to go right now.
Yeah, and ultimately, I think they're going to have to make a tough decision somewhere. And I think ideally they'd like to give a guy away somewhere, but it looks like they're going to have to take a hit on these players, right? Like whether it's Garland, whether it's Besser, and we've spoken about Myers, but does it not really seem to be those two guys they're more aggressive trying to do these things with, and whether it's Garland or Besser that they're willing to maybe trade down or willing to attach a draft pick for?
Yeah, I don't know about Besser. I don't know that price tag teams are really salivating over.
Yeah.
I mean, and you look at, obviously, he didn't go and play at the Worlds, and you look at what Connor Garland's doing right now there, and it might, you know, make some GMs a little bit happy. Say, okay, this guy can still produce at a decent level on a decent clip. You know, can he be serviceable to us, and is he at this number? And the answer is yes. I just don't know that Brock is. It wouldn't surprise me if he started the season here and was a Canucks until after trade deadline. I mean, it's just a really difficult move to make. And the only reason why we say it so much is because they haven't not tried everything to make it happen. And I think that that's where the frustration is within the fan base. Is, well, why can't they move? Well, they have.
Yeah.
They've definitely tried. And it's retaining salary that's one that they're not going to do. At least that's what we've heard from right until this moment. But beyond that, you know, you're going to try and get creative. So it's got to be other ways. And I don't think Brock's the guy.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with you. And I think organizationally, and we had this discussion, and people are texting in and saying, like, what are you seeing in Brock Besser that you're not seeing in Garland? Garland's the better player and everything. And I think organizationally, they'd rather have Besser than Garland.
Yeah, I agree. And I think if you can move Garland, you know, a little bit of money off the books, you're going to. That's just the way it is, and it's, fans aren't going to like hearing that, but that's just the way that they view him, and that's the way that obviously that he didn't get traded. So, I mean, I don't want to say you're stuck with him because they want him to believe, like they want him to work out here. I mean, he's in week three of a pretty rigorous off-season training program right now that he's doing. He's obviously had talks with Tockett and then what the expectation is coming into next season, and I think that he's pretty motivated to try to accomplish that.
Well, just reading the tea leaves a little bit and thinking about some of the things Rick Tockett mentioned during the season and some of his availabilities, you know, he'd like it if guys stay here. He'd prefer if some guys don't go to the Worlds and those types of things. And here's Brock. He's been in Vancouver recently, as we've talked about, as his social media shows us, and he's not gone to the Worlds. It almost sounds like a guy that's trying to get in the good books of the coach.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a prior commitment to why he was here. I think he's back in Minnesota now, but he's still here. And while he was here, he was working out. I mean, I do know that. Look, I think that obviously you have a new coach and, you know, you saw the way that your season was kind of sliding down and your name has been thrown around in trade rumors for the last 2.5 years almost, right? You're going to be motivated and you're going to want to come back into shape and to not only prove to, you know, your coaches and management and ownership, but kind of prove to yourself a little bit too, right? That, you know, you're still this player. You're still this guy that can score 29 goals. And I think that that's kind of where his head's at right now.
Yeah, and I mean, just looking at it stylistically, Besser, with all his issues and all his struggles, right, was still getting more ice time and opportunity than Connor Garland under three different head coaches over the past calendar year.
Well, Tockett loved that line, you know, the DiGiuseppe, Miller, and Besser line. Yeah. Not saying that they will be reunited come training camp, but...
No, and we saw Boudreau moving Garland down and really leaning on Besser, right? We saw even beginning of the season with the same thing with Travis Green, and Garland was still getting a chance and everything, but he was always kind of finding himself as a third guy and finding himself on the third line oftentimes. And I just think the way they view functional play here and what guys can do, they're just not a fit for Garland. And I think... What is the most you think they do to get rid of that money? Like, do you think they do something like that? Like trade 11 for 19, like we talked about before. Like, do you think they would do something like that, or do you think they would like to give up less to get him?
Ideally, sad. I think everyone obviously wants to give up less, but if they have to do something, and if it gets to the point where they're desperate enough, I think that they will. And the Sharks are obviously circling. Everybody knows the cap hell the Canucks are in. Like, it's no secret. It's in black and white. It's written. Right, that they need some help here, and teams are going to try and go after them, and teams are going to try and, you know, get their players for minimal to nothing, and if that's something that, or they're going to have to give up something if they really really want one of their players. So, from the Canucks' point of view, if whatever team is going to come and offer you something, you almost have to take it because you got to improve your team here on the fly in the summer.
So, as far as you know, the Canucks still very much a waiting game as it comes to their offseason and what things are going to happen, because they have to open up space, and we know what they want to go out and get to. They want that third line center. They want to maybe add another defenseman to this roster, but you know, it almost seems elementary as to how they want to do it. It's just mostly about how they are going to do it, as we are going to keep discussing all the way up until draft day, I'm sure.
100%. I mean, we're going to have this conversation every single week until someone gets traded. I'm not kidding you. We're literally going to have this conversation every single week. Yeah, we'll touch on maybe the Lakers are out again. So, but we're definitely going to have this conversation. It's going to be every week. It's going to be something different, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, Connor Garland and Brock Besser's names are definitely going to come up. And, you know, 2 weeks we're going to talk about Tyler Myers. It's just the way it is, and it's just those players. I don't see any other players' names coming up that, you know, the Canucks want to part ways with, or the Canucks that they aren't that high on. I think it is those three names, but, you know, just reading the tea leaves and from talking to people, it really is too.
Well, it is, right? And I think in a perfect world, if they can move Garland's money out and they can make some moves that they want to make, I think in an ideal world, they'd like to get some value for Beauvillier and Myers. And the only way you can get value for those guys is to hold on to them until close to the trade deadline. Because once you pay Myers his bonus, right, and once you get past the new year, he's going to be owed next to nothing. You retain money on that at the deadline, it's a lot easier to move. Same thing for Beauvillier. And honestly, guys, like, I know some people listening now are saying, what if they're in a playoff spot? Then there's no way they're moving those guys. I find that to be a fallacy. I think what you're seeing now, even from contenders, is they'll move guys and then make other moves to make additions, right? You can easily move, like the Leafs did it with Engvall, for instance. They moved him. They got a third back in return, made other deals. You can easily still make those types of moves. So, like, if you're trying to maximize your assets, because you're probably not getting quality back for Garland until a year or two down the road, right? Besser probably a whole year. But by the deadline, like, you're getting something for Myers and Pavelier. And could you make those moves then and then get other assets to go and make your team better at the deadline?
Yeah. I mean, look, I think the playoff talk and what if they're in a playoff position conversation should be completely thrown out the window. As it's situated right now, this team's not a lot of playoff team on paper. They're just not. There's holes and a lot of different spots in that lineup that they need to improve. And I think the time to improve isn't holding on to guys. Like, you got to make these moves now before you get into training camp. You have to get aggressive. You have to be creative. And you really got to get these guys in to start this season. And I get it. Like, what happens if they go on a 0-7 start to start the year again? What's going to happen then? And everyone's going to want to trade everybody all over again. This is the summer where they have to hit home runs on a lot of the moves that they're going to do to try and improve this hockey team.
Well, at least the Canucks are no longer the Canadian team in the most dysfunction, right? It's the pals over in Toronto nowadays with how things went over the last week. What do you think the fallout is here after Dubas leaves? And now the questions for the new GM become, how do you keep Austin Matthews, I guess?
How do you keep Austin Matthews happy? I think that's another question, right? I mean, it's what, 3-year deal? I don't think, or a 5-year deal. Is he going to sign one that's that long?
Yeah.
He's probably going to make at least $15 million. It's going to be a lot of money.
You think he gets that much?
It's north of 13 for sure. It's got to be.
Yeah. I think it's at least 13.
Right? At least. Like, 13 is a bare minimum, I think. Like, and he's going to make a lot of money. And he should. He deserves it. Right now, everyone says, okay, playoff performance and this and that, but the guy's numbers and his analytics are pretty good for a guy that's going to make money, and goal scorers get paid, right? We've seen that in the National Hockey League. Austin Matthews is an absolutely incredible goal scorer, so he's going to get paid. But, yeah, the dysfunction's wild. I mean, look, you have a president of hockey ops who reports to the board and the ownership group who doesn't really like the GM. And he's the one that I think is calling most of the shots there, to be completely honest. And then you see how that rift kind of worked out. And then Kyle Dubas kind of saying that, you know, obviously he had to take care of what's best for his family, which I have no problem with, 100%. Good on him for actually doing that. And then it was, well, did he want more money or what was going to happen? Or did he have a trade that was for Tage Thompson, who Austin Matthews said that was one of the best players ever, and now that's why all Leaf fans are going crazy? Because it's just wild. Yeah. I mean, it's thank God it's not a Vancouver soap opera, because that one's way worse.
Well, it is. I mean, it's far more dysfunctional, I think, than people realized. Like,
yeah. Oh yeah,
like they're missing out on trades and moves because they have to wait to hear back from ownership and everything. I mean, people make fun of Vancouver and them not making moves. I mean, how dysfunctional has it been in Toronto over the past few years? You know, like if that's the level of stuff that was happening. You know, and other things that have been going on there. I mean, I think oftentimes we get caught up in narratives.
Yeah.
Right? And I think there were a lot of positive narratives about the Leafs. But, you know, you're seeing a lot of more of the same as the curtain gets peeled back more and more.
I think of the most, quote-unquote, dysfunctional or the teams that are kind of a mess in the National Hockey League. Like, if you look at the top 5 or 10, three of them are Canadian.
Yeah.
Right? And it sucks because, you know, you want – you know, teams to do well in this country and things like that. But you have owners and you have people in management and you got people that don't see eye to eye on a lot of different clubs. And, you know, it's tough. I mean, there's frustration from obviously, you know, people in MLSC is the board up there. And then Larry Tannenbaum and his crew, he's probably getting yelled at by someone as to why the Leafs aren't making it past the first round every single year. Whereas here, you know, you have a local ownership group who, you know, wants their team to do really, really, really well. And, yeah, sometimes maybe to a fault of their own. There's a little bit of other stuff going on. And then, obviously, in Ottawa, before, you know, Melnick passed, there was all sorts of stories about some crazy stuff happening. So, it just sucks. But, I mean, that is the name of the game. You know, you look at billionaire owners around the world of sports. I mean, there's a lot of dysfunction when you have that many commas in your bank account.
No question about it. I think there's quite a few reasons why no Canadian team has won a Stanley Cup in now 30 years. But let's talk about these playoffs. Vegas out to a 2-0 lead, Florida out to a 3-0 lead right now. I mean, traveling between Miami and Vegas should be should be fun for a lot of those that are attending the Stanley Cup Finals. But as for Florida, you know, they came into the playoffs barely, like they squeak in. They squeak in because Pittsburgh lost that game to Chicago, right? Yep. And for most of the season, this was a team that couldn't play a lick of defense. And over the last couple of years was a team that couldn't play or didn't play a lick of defense. And I get it. Bobrovsky is making every save, basically. But it's also a team that has been completely different from the team that we saw during the regular season. Do you agree?
We did. I mean, yeah, 100%. I mean, we did, like, we would do, you know, segments and videos and saying what's wrong with the Florida Panthers halfway through the year. I think a lot of it had to do with health. You know, they're finally healthy. They finally have everyone available to them in the lineup. And I think that because of that, you know, you see what the potential of this team was. I mean, a lot of people, look, they were the President's Trophy winner last year. They were a good hockey team. And it really does help that you have Sergei Bobrovsky playing like he won the Vezina a couple of years, right? That you, he can't be beat. Yeah. Like, they're comfortable winning 1-0 hockey games. They're comfortable winning 2-0 hockey games, like, or 2-1 games or 3-2 games. And that's a tough team to play against, right? And if you look at Matthew Tkachuk, like, he's really, I don't want to say emerge himself as a superstar because he's already had that level, but I think it's his leadership on that team that's completely gone the other way, and people aren't crediting it in enough. Like, he's definitely a guy that's really, really, really well-liked in that room. And when he speaks and has something to say, people listen. For all the crap that he does on the ice and all the extracurricular stuff, guys really, really are drawn towards him.
Yeah. No, they are, right? Now, overall, though, watching this entire NHL postseason, there's been a lot of discussions here about, you know, what type of teams people should build and what they should do. And a lot of narratives, too, about the Florida Panthers, right? How, oh, this was a team that was a powerhouse last year and everything. How much are you calling cap on stuff, and how much are you saying this is legit? Because, you know, all this talk about you don't need superstars, and it's like, well, you still kind of do. And all this talk about, like, well, you know, Florida, look at this great team. They've been great for a number of years. They finally knocked a door down this year. I mean, if Pittsburgh doesn't lose to Chicago, Florida doesn't even make the playoffs. You know what
well,
I mean? So, so how much of the stuff that we hear at this time of year is narrative-based, and how much of it is actually true?
Well, I mean, we're in the media industry. We all sit here and have to talk about who the Canucks are going to trade for the next 5 weeks. So it's definitely narrative, right? It is. I think that everyone, you know, wants to talk about something and they gravitate towards the next cool story or the next big thing that is. And right now, the Florida Panthers are the next big thing and what they were able to do and the way that they built their team. I mean, look, you trade Jonathan Huberdeau and you get Matthew Tkachuk. It's a pretty, I mean, look, I'd say it's kind of an even trade. You're trading a superstar for a superstar. You finally get healthy. You get contributions from guys like Bennett, guys like Reinhart. Radko Gudas is playing well, right? Mark and Eric Staal. Like, who would have seen the performances that they're having? So it's just a case of, like, guys that are really playing to their potential, and they've got a ridiculous goal.
Before we let you go, Irv, I on the weekend I drove 2.5 hours to satisfy a food craving. Would you ever do something like that?
Yeah, I've done Whistler once.
Whistler? Okay.
I'm not telling you the restaurant, though, because I don't want anyone to know.
You're gatekeeping all the good restaurants? So you're one of those guys.
Yeah, I'll text you. Hey,
all right,
you both
text
have
me,
my number. You can text me.
All right.
No problem at all. All
right. So if you don't gatekeep to me, but, you know, our audience, different story.
Yeah. I mean, look, we've all done something crazy. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, that's there's no doubt about that one.
How was the food?
It was fantastic. I had this food craving since I went to L.A. a couple months ago. Restaurant's not in Canada, but there's, I think, 4 locations in the Seattle area, so just had to do it.
So round trip, how long did it take?
Round trip, coming back was super easy because there was no border wait, but probably about 5 hours driving, maybe a little bit more.
5 hours round trip?
So it's like that, like the only thing was like drive in, you had your reservation, you quickly ate, and you were out?
No, we made like a, you know, Target run and
like,
Trader Joe's
like
run.
Like a day of it, or like an afternoon or evening or whatever.
That's definitely way farther than anywhere I've gone just for food.
Sat, the guy who's always eating, has never done a road trip just for a food craving?
Not that far. I think the farthest I've gone would be, I think once I went from...
Sat gets too hungry. He's just going right
Honestly,
forward,
I had a drive-thru on my way there. I'm not making it. There's no way.
That's not stopping a Jack in the Box, and I tell you that too.
100%. All right. Thanks for this. Yeah. There he is, Irfan Ghaffar, joining us here on Canuck Central.
I think this is Silver and Black Canuck. Literally driving from Port Coquitlam to AJ's Brooklyn Pizzeria right now, Dan. There's no shame in traveling for food craving. It's not that bad. I mean, Port Coquitlam, Poco to here. I mean,
yeah. That's, I mean, it's close to about an hour drive around this time.
Not too bad.
I would
it's
say.
Not too bad. A couple hours. I guess. I mean, I think I've gone to Surrey before from Vancouver to go out for dinner, like White Rock.
Yeah.
I go to Crescent Beach quite often.
Yeah. I mean, that's not, that's pretty normal.
Yeah. I love White Rock. Yeah. A lot of great restaurants there too. And, you know, I lived there briefly when I was younger. So it's always nice going back.
Okay.
So I go there. I would say, I mean, I guess it could take you up to like an hour and a bit to get to White Rock sometimes.
See, the thing about this, though, is it was for Din Tai Fung, which is a chain, a Taiwanese chain.
Yeah.
And there's a ton of them in the U.S. There isn't any in Canada. I know there are, like, I've tried a couple of places, Vancouver local, that do similar cuisine and similar things and do them well, but nothing really reached that level of Din Tai Fung. So, I'm on the quest to find more places like it in Vancouver.
Let Dan know.
Because, we've got to have more places.
Oh, there are really good places.
I mean, I know there's a ton of places that do, you know, dim sum and Chow Long Bao very well and all these different types of things. So, I just got to find more spots.
Because
I want to support local.
Yeah,
rather
exactly.
Having to drive 3 hours.
Look at you. Not only not supporting local, you're going out of the country. Giving all your money. And then you go to Target and you go.
What does he have?
4 hours ago.
Just to go to dinner.
You just cheated the Canadian economy out of $500, Dan.
Just to go to dinner.
Yeah, and, you know, Silver and Black Canuck says, you forget that it's rush hour. That doubles the time.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
That's true. I mean, around this time, driving from Poco to Vancouver, that's a commitment right there.
Jabbar says, I do AJ's in van from Delta. So, yeah. People are doing it.
Yeah. 45 minutes for Triple O's in Toronto. Only spots are 45 minutes outside the city. Well worth it. I know where one of the Triple O's is because it's near where I grew up, actually.
Oh, Woodbridge.
In Woodbridge. So I know what that texter is feeling, texting in all the way from the 416. It is Canuck Central, Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. Coming up next, Don Taylor here on Canuck Central.